are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, December 22nd, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the final live program, as if a lot of you care, of 2015.
What was that for?
I'm just saying, there's a lot of people who most people listen as a podcast. So, like, it's never live for them. On the program today, the great Cliff Schechter to say goodbye to 2015. And, you know, not a hello to 2016, but a walk this way. You'll be welcome in a couple of, 10 days. 9 days. Also on the program today, a preview of President Obama's last State of the Union.
It's going to be very unconventional.
That's what they're saying. No indictments in the death of Sandra Bland, but that investigation is not over. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now the case that there is no major Republican candidate. There's no Republican candidate short of George Pataki, who is, I mean, he's running for president just slightly more than I am.
Sort of post-retiree bucket list activity, right?
I'm quite convinced I'm more engaged in politics than he is, except for he shows up at the debates.
I'm quite convinced that you might actually pull more votes in a Republican primary than George Pataki.
It's not inconceivable, but I'm not running. But that means that with Lindsey Graham's exit, and you know, it's not like he was any big shakes in that either. There is no Republican candidate who believes in climate science.
We're all going to die.
Just not from climate change.
Climate change is going to be all right. We can have a Tom Collins and ride it out. But if it starts with Al, we're going to blow up.
White guy builds a bomb, plans to detonate it to blow up some Muslims in the United States. So American citizens. And barely anybody blinks. I can almost guarantee you it will not be brought up at the next Republican or Democratic debate. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go quickly to Cliff Schechter. He doesn't have too much time. But just a reminder, this is our final live show of the year. It just happens to fall at a weird time this year. I don't know. Usually, it always seems to be like on a Friday, and then it just feels like we'll be back in, you know, Wednesday. But we're actually going to return on Monday, January 4th, live. But we've got so much great content for you. It's almost criminal. In fact, we had to check with the state's attorney general to make sure that we were not breaking any laws by giving this much great content when we're supposedly on vacation. Well, that's not true, but I did check with the Labor Department just to make sure that we weren't. Tomorrow, we have a new interview with, who is it? Gary...
Gary Dorian.
Gary Dorian on W.B. Du Bois and the history of the black social gospel. And also an interview with a Canadian writer and researcher on the rise of Uber and an interesting sort of take on this. He wrote a piece in the Jacobin. And then on Thursday, we start with our cavalcade of best ofs. And I have to say, Matt has, and particularly since you haven't even been here the whole year, you have outdone yourself in the selections, Matt. And of course, also, I want to thank our listeners for helping us with that. So I want to thank you. We'll have plenty of time to talk after Cliff because he's got to go early. But final live show of 2015, and we're going to take a quick break and be back with Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program our normal Friday guest, but he wasn't able to join us on Friday, and I wanted to make this a metaphorical Friday for the year in that it's instead of ending the week, it's going to end the year, at least in terms of our live shows. Cliff Schechter, as always, a pleasure to have you and a pleasure to play this song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. CliffShackedLLC.com.
There's a certain sadness in that we won't hear that song again this year, but it's only really, you know, we're only talking about 2 weeks. So, Cliffy, how are you?
You can play it while at home. You can play it to the kids while you're in the shower, while you're cooking breakfast. I mean, you know, it works for everything.
I would be surprised if there weren't already. In fact, I would be disappointed if there weren't already people who listening to this program have not recorded that Jimmy Reefer Cake song and turned it into their ringtone. I'd be sort of shocked.
Oh, cool. I should be one of those people. I haven't thought of that. Now, yeah. That would make me kind of an arrogant jerk, so I won't. But I will tell you, and I've told you this before, that here around where I live in the Cincinnati area, when I go back east to D.C., back home in New York, everywhere, I've run into a good half dozen people that know who I am simply because of your show, Sam.
Well, do they come up to you and they just go, Cliff Schecter? Libertas.
Actually, yes, a few of them have. The thing that I've spoken about on the show here, the Innocence Project that I do here, you know, I think I told you this when it happened. We had a gala a year ago to raise money, and a guy who is from Northern Kentucky, you know, across the bridge, who's a lawyer and, you know, went to the University of Cincinnati Law School, which the Innocence Project is attached to, showed up and saw my name tag and was like, are you the Cliff Schecter from, you know, and that's where he knew me from. He knew me from the Majority Report.
Oh, that's
great. You guys who don't think this show has vast reach, you don't know.
Oh, no, I just assume because my wife has never heard the show that nobody else has. And, you know, I've just got to get out more often is really the problem. All right. So
if I judged everything that I write now, every column and every performance on whether my wife is willing to watch or read them, they'd all be trees falling in the forest.
Yes.
And you know what? I respect her for that because at the beginning, I think it was kind of exciting. You know, oh, wow, you're on TV. Or, oh, wow, you know, you wrote something that's published. But there is a point where you do enough of this, and you certainly know this, Sam, where it's like, again, yay.
Right. It's like, seriously, the kid has a cold. Do you really have to go do that? And yes.
Get over yourself.
All right, so let's talk about 2015, you know, and we don't have to keep it to that, I mean, per se, because the insanity continues, and we're going to see more of it going into 2016. We did a little bit of a recap with Digby on Friday, and, you know, we've obviously been you know, keeping in touch with what's going on a week-to-week basis, but let's do a little bit.
It gets worse on a week-to-week basis. Well, I mean, and just when you don't think it can get any worse, you hear someone that looks like Donald Trump use the word schlong.
That's right.
And I don't like hearing that word and looking at him at the same time. I feel like it's like a baboon mating call.
We haven't now. Yes. And we will play that sound a little bit later in the program. But Donald Trump apparently at his speech last night said that Obama schlonged Hillary Clinton. So she lost her election. For those people who are not from, who are not familiar with Yiddish, I guess. Cliff, having grown up in New York in the 70s, I imagine you heard schlong quite a bit.
I always wondered why it was that there's so many words for penis in Yiddish, and we've basically brought them all over here. We like them. Schmuck, schmendrick, schlong.
I think putz is actually, too.
Putz, no? There's another good one. Yeah, see? I mean, we basically imported them all.
I think I don't know if there's like sort of a qualitative difference between those words in terms of their descriptive, in terms of what they're specifically describing. But Kelly's giving me a weird look. I didn't say it. Donald Trump said it.
Let's
talk about this for a minute. Now, there's a couple of things that coming out of the debate that are quite clear to me. And one is that the Democratic National Committee has really been, now look, I don't know that it makes a difference. If the debate was held on Tuesday night and 20 million people watched it, I don't know that it would change the polls between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, but that's not really the point. I mean, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC has no doubt been, basically putting their thumbs on the scale for Hillary Clinton. It is just stupid politically, and
yep.
It is it's, you know, that's all I want to say about it. It's just, it's stupid politically. I mean, it's wrong, obviously, but it's just stupid politically. It's just stupid.
I think it's incredibly stupid. And, you know, and look, I'm somebody who is leaning towards Hillary, to be quite honest, as you know, for a variety of reasons, some of which I've talked about on this show. But I mean, at the same time, I think I can be very objective here, because this is not, you know, I'm not shilling for any candidate. I'm not saying anybody else is, but I think I can be very clear that I'm being objective, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's incredibly stupid. Either one of them, the whole point is either one of them who's the nominee, you want to win eventually the general election. That's the big one that we need. So isn't getting them as much exposure as possible the better idea? Isn't putting it on a night when more people will watch it and learn that we have these two, three, if O'Malley, you know, you want to throw him in there, three very talented, capable candidates, all of which can run circles around that group of buffoonish imbeciles that gets together at Fox News to hold their debates. I mean, so, you know, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I have not been able to stand for a long time. I mean, you know, she's somebody who is a complete careerist, and would, you know, she's protected Ileana Ros-Lehtinen. I'm probably mispronouncing her name, and some of the other Cuban Republicans down in Florida. She won't let the DCCC go after them because they are people that support her.
So to have professional courtesy or something. Yeah.
Right. She doesn't want to offend her Cuban supporters and her Cuban money. She's a pawn of the sugar interests. She's always been that way. She's the one who opposed the medicinal marijuana ballot measure. And when it barely lost her, she puts her thumbs on the scale. That's her entire life. So it's just so dumb. I mean, I did in this state too, in Ohio, where we've got this great, you know, the top voter in the city council here in Cincinnati, a younger guy named P.G. Sittenfeld, who's running for the Senate against our former incumbent governor, Ted Strickland, who was an NRA endorsee and got a 30% rating from NARAL and all this stuff. And there are a lot of people that would rather see the next generation, considering Strickland's about 75 years old, you know, get that Senate seat. And yet, you know, the party here in Ohio endorsed Strickland. What did they do? They pissed off a lot of people. It's just dumb. It doesn't gain anything. Let the process play out. Don't either endorse or like put, you know, try to say, we'll have the debates at 2 a.m. Sunday morning when there's a full moon and the bell rings. You know, I mean, like they're trying to, in every way possible, to put this thing away for Hillary. And the truth is that she should earn it.
And
as should Bernie or anyone else.
And here's the thing that also I find, disturbing about this too, is that it's not just Debbie Wasserman Schultz. This is a political miscalculation by Hillary Clinton. And I feel very confident that any Democrat is going to beat any of the Republican nominees in the fall. But, you know, this type of calculus, I think, is just bad politics. It's just smart. It is not a good assessment.
And the thing is, Sam, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, that's it. I mean, it's just not smart politics.
Right. Well, I very much agree with you. And I very much agree with you that any of those three Democrats would beat almost any of the Republicans. Yet, as we know, crazier things have happened and last minute, you know, October surprises. And the point here is that right now we're at a point in time where one of our two major national parties is a joke and can't be trusted. And, you know, with the keys to the nuclear codes, much less anything else. So being that you know that party, and even one of the people that you know is more sane in that party, just right-wing but actually sane, like let's say Jeb Bush, has no chance at that nomination. So the point is that you're sitting there right now, and I would say you've got somewhere between an 85 and 95% chance that it's either Trump or it's Cruz. I think it's going to be Cruz, but it's one or the two. Rubio, unless he can sort of pull off a miraculous New Hampshire comeback, there's nowhere for him to win, and the waiting for Florida strategy is that genius strategy that Rudy Giuliani put together that worked oh so well for him. I mean, if Cruz wins in Iowa, which it looks, but it looks likely, and then Trump would put everything into New Hampshire to answer if he really wants this thing, and so, he'd probably win New Hampshire, and then one of the two of them win South Carolina. I mean, by the time you get to Florida, it's over. It's one of those two. So, I mean, I really think Rubio is getting to a point where I don't care, you know, if so-called mainstream Republicans, whatever the hell that means these days, want him to win, there's just not enough votes there. And so knowing that one of these two crazy people is going to be the nominee means that even if there's a 1 in 1,000 chance we could lose to them, you know, do everything.
Right, the margin for error is very
small.
Yeah. And just a reminder, you know, this is the only major party in the world that does not accept the science on climate change, amongst other issues. But it is disappointing just to see this. And I will say this. There's also, I mean, you know, yesterday I talked about the way that she's been talking about taxes, which, you know, again, I understand why you don't want to be a candidate who's going out there. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it. No, I don't agree with it. But I can understand the thinking of, like, I don't want my campaign to be about I'm going to raise taxes on the middle class. But that's different from coming out and taking a pledge in the Democratic primary that I'm not going to raise taxes on the middle class. Because frankly, what you're doing is you're foreclosing any major government programs at that point, any universal programs. You're foreclosing yourself against, you know, and I guess she wants to maybe, you know, maybe it's a negotiation tactic or something, but you're closing yourself against Senator Gillibrand's paid parental leave.
A
program.
I mean, and I think that's I think I agree with you 100% on that. I think it's a bad tactic. I mean, it's a shame. I think it's representative of some of the situation we're in, because we actually should be able to have our cake and eat it too, so to speak, if we weren't blowing, wasting, say it how you will, the enormous amount of money we are spending on the military. But the fact of the matter is that we are. And there's some Democrats very responsible for that, too. And that's not going to change. So the truth of the matter is that, yeah, taking that pledge is crazy. Saying that you're going to that your tax, you know, increases are going to be weighted heavily to the top 1% or whatever, however you want to put it, is fine. But I agree. I think taking a pledge, unless you're willing to go back on that pledge, in which case, why, you know, then you're just going to make yourself look more dishonest.
Right.
I don't see it. You can't, because we right now we're spending money on other things, and we don't seem to be able to stop spending money on those things because of the way our government's set up. And you know, and so you're going to need taxes from other sources. You're just going to, if you want to do these programs. And I think most of us would say that sick, you know, paid family leave, sick leave, a variety of these things are kind of essential in a modern democracy.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's pivot to one thing that I think was that sort of, you know, I was critical of the decision to keep focusing on Trump during the Democratic campaign, because I think that there's an opportunity here to indicate to people that, you know, this is not just about Trump, it's about the Republican Party. With that said, I think it turns out to have been incredibly effective for Clinton and for Sanders, for that matter, to keep referring to Trump in the course of the debate. And I think we can see why today, because Trump has now come out and gone full Trump on Clinton. The schlong things. He went on, he said, I hate reporters, but I'd never kill them. And then he sort of joked around.
And this is the guy who just said he liked Vladimir Putin who's saying that. Well, you know, and...
But here's the thing.
I
mean, you remember when Obama first got into office, even in the run-up to him getting in office, they were talking about Rush Limbaugh a lot. And Limbaugh took the bait. Of course, he has to. And there was like a year-long period where essentially Rush Limbaugh was more or less
the foil.
The foil. And Trump has, of course, taken the bait, because when Donald Trump gets up there and says, you know, Obama schlonged Hillary Clinton, the only reaction that that his followers have is like, why didn't we think of that? Of course.
I did schlong her.
And the truth is that you're talking about somebody who, you know, has the same mentality as Rush Limbaugh.
Right.
I mean,
no,
these
of course.
These are these sort of sleazy, you know, privileged, obnoxious white guys who are used to the fact that they are deeply, deeply insecure inside, and they need the adoring crowds to make them feel like they even exist at all. And when you're Trump, you don't, you know, when you're Trump or you're Rush Limbaugh, but that's what you get. I mean, from a certain segment of the populace, it's a hell of a lot less than half of it. But a certain segment will adore you, and they would rather have that, so they don't care.
And he's now I mean, this is, you know, you got to hand it to the guy. It's brilliant, because he's going to be the guy coming into the, like, you know, 4 weeks out from Iowa, 5 weeks out from Iowa, is going to be the guy who is now taking on Hillary. And this is all they care about on the right. I mean, this is going to edify his position. And I mean, what we're already hearing now is, and I'm hearing this from a lot of different people, particularly in Washington, that there's talk of a brokered convention at this point. There's talk that, you know, there was that Washington Post piece the other day that suggested that maybe they would run a Mitt Romney, the establishment would, to actually run against the Republican Party, or maybe at a brokered convention they would get Paul Ryan. First off, I think a lot of this is just bunk. I think it's just a way of trying to scare people into somehow not voting for Donald Trump. I mean, it's a hapless Agreed. Sort of Hail Mary. I don't think, because if they did something like this, it would be, you know, the idea would be that we want to protect down ballot races. Are you kidding me? This would speed up the end of the Republican Party by about 15 years. And frankly, that's where I think we're headed. I mean, I think we're headed to a fracture.
I do too.
I mean, because
I didn't think we were in the past, but I mean, this cycle has finally kind of, you know, it's always a question of how much, you know, by sinking lower and lower in terms of the base instincts they appeal to. Really, when you get to a point of through and through populism of right wing variety that is really, you know, you call it populism, it's really a form of neo-fascism is what it is, which is what you have in right wing parties across Europe. You have, because of the parliamentary systems, you know, and other parts of the world, parties that are purely made up of your Trump type demagogues. You know, see Silvio Berlusconi, for example. And so in the end, you know, and I'd say a big difference is Italy has a lot more laws preventing what someone like Silvio Berlusconi can do than we do. Someone like Trump, if in power, can do a lot more damage. But point being that was the only question is have they maxed out? You know, starting with, you know, 40, 50 years ago with Goldwater through Nixon's Southern strategy and Reagan and Philadelphia, Mississippi, and then George W. and the 1994 takeover Congress, yada, yada, yada. Have they maxed out on the angry, racist, xenophobic, white, rural or suburban working class voter? You know, has that and the thing that maybe I miscalculated before this cycle is they hadn't. And Trump has brought even more of that out, has brought it out stronger. The truth is that's what the core of their party is no longer Main Street or Wall Street. It's that. That is the vast core of their party. So the truth is that, you know, for someone like Trump, there's no reason to stop saying what he's saying. And the entertainment complex on the right, as we've discussed before, has gotten this for a long, long time.
Yep.
It doesn't matter what happens to the Republican Party. They profit when there's a Democrat in power. All the better for everybody from the NRA to Rush Limbaugh to Fox News to have somebody else in power. So the only question was, will we eventually get somebody beyond some, you know, half-wit like Mike Huckabee? Will we finally get somebody who's part of that, you know, that part of the Republican Party, the entertainment complex, who actually is so good, you know, at being full of it, that they will you know, attain a leadership position and damage the party in a major way?
Well, we
and
should
finally,
also say
with a number of new.
It's,
yeah,
it's not just Trump's talent. It's frankly the fact that he's not a politician benefits him, not because he's plain spoken or whatnot. It's that he doesn't care. He doesn't care about his future in the Republican Party. He has no ties to that apparatus whatsoever. His life is no different.
He also doesn't care
different.
About saving his Senate seat.
He doesn't
right?
care or, about or saving his Senate seat. He doesn't care about going and getting favors. The guy's a billionaire. He just doesn't care. He doesn't
right.
care. And
it was always, in the, you look back now, and inevitably, it has to end up this way, right? I mean, they played, you know, they traded long-term stability as a party for short-term gain. And it worked for about 30, 40 years for them. Largely, they rolled back a lot of what they could have, you know, I mean, not huge amount, thankfully, but some of what LBJ and FDR did. They certainly held back mostly on more social programs. You'd sneak a chip in here and there and, you know, unpaid family leave the way Bill Clinton did, or you'd sneak in, you know, Obamacare or things like that. But mostly they've been able to stop, you know, the kinds of social programs that were passed seemingly every week by LBJ. But by doing that, by appealing to that base instinct, they united, you know, the right wing West and North that they already had with right wing Southerners that used to be Democrats to create such the enormous base of people, all of whom are out of the mainstream and don't represent more than, you know, 35-40% of this country at best, and is increasingly smaller and smaller.
And
so
And I think we're seeing also, you know, the confluence of two other things. That is technology, right? Because the internet has a lot to do with this. I mean, it has a lot to do with a lot of phenomena like this, where people can are just aware of other people out there like them. You know, they're like-minded. So it enhances the power of people. I mean, it is, you know, democratizing in that way. And then the other one, I think you made the point, is like there's just so much money on the right that that, you know, these alternative agendas could just sort of, there's just too much incentive for people. And in some ways, Trump is that way too, right? Like, he has an incentive to be this nuts, even if he isn't or he is, it doesn't matter. He has an incentive.
Well, he has the money already, so all he wants are the adoring crowds. And, you know, that's what he needs. He's not doing this, like, let's say, like, like Huckabee.
Exactly.
Go on the right-wing gravy circuit. So for him, if he can fill a stadium, as he's been able to do, with 50,000 people that will chant his name and love him and whatever, that's what he needs. That's his big insecurity. And, you know, and so the other stuff doesn't matter, right? And for somebody, as you point out, already the party doesn't matter to him. And he's saving a position which he doesn't have as a senator, governor, whatever. Viability for the future doesn't matter. So the only thing that was ever going to matter anyhow maybe was money, and maybe that was a motivator to keep acting this way, maybe not, but in the end that doesn't matter. There's really no disincentive you can provide the guy. I mean, yeah, he lost the show on NBC, you know, big deal, right? He'll come out and he'll find something else. Somebody with the popularity he has among a crazy segment, maybe it'll be a cable channel or whatever, but if he wants to get himself out there somewhere, he can do that.
Right.
He's got nothing to lose, absolutely zero.
And we're just at the beginning of this. I mean, folks should understand that, you know, not a single vote has been cast yet. Now, it's quite possible that it turns out they show up in Iowa, you know, Ted Cruz wins, Trump comes in second or third, and then he goes to New Hampshire and he comes in second. And then basically, you know, I think if something like that happens, then maybe Trump starts to fade and go away. But if he comes in second in Iowa and then first in New Hampshire, you know, we're off to the races. And I mean,
but, you know, and I would say also, though, even if it's not Trump right now, in most of the recent polls I've looked at, the leading person by far, second choice of Trump people, was Cruz, who has only gotten away with being the near fascist demagogue that he is because Trump makes him look, you know, actually more moderate. I can't even use that word. Not as crazy, let's put it that way. But when you see, you know, when the full Ted Cruz comes out, you know, the truth is they'd be training all their fire on him, whatever remnants of the establishment there are, if it wasn't for Trump, because they all hate him and know he's just out for himself, too. I mean, he shakes hands with somebody, makes a deal with them, the next day he's out on TV calling them names. They know they can't trust him. You know?
Let me ask you this question. I know you got to go in a second. You just tell me when you've got to go, because I know you're on a clock here.
Got about 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay, here's the one question that I was asked on by an IM the other day, and I was asked in person who hurts them more, particularly down ticket, in Senate races and congressional races, Trump or Cruz going up against any of the Democrats?
From everything I've looked at, it seems Trump does, because Trump loses some core Republican voters who don't trust him still. He wins some other people, but there's some people core, so there's some evangelicals, there's some others, at least from stuff I've seen, that don't trust him because of past positions and because, you know, they don't trust him as a core, you know, partisan Republican, where I think nobody doubts that with Ted Cruz. And so I still think either of them, as long as things go normally and there isn't some shock to the system, something crazy doesn't happen, loses states Republicans don't normally lose, and not only costs them the Senate in a relatively big way, but we, you know, we probably don't win the House back. That's probably too big of a climb, but we win a good section of seats back. We win a good 20-25 seats.
You know this stuff better than I do. Let me ask you this. Is the calculation that people stay home on the right, or is the calculation that more people are motivated to come out and vote against this person, and when they do, they'll vote against that party?
I think both of those are in play. I think you will turn out either of those guys with the bombs they throw and the stuff they've said and the playing to fascist themes. They will turn out
people on our side like no one has ever done it before. So I think there's that. But yeah, I do think they'll also turn off some people. They won't turn off the right, mind you. They'll turn off those kinds of center-right Republicans we've talked about. I mean, I can name a half dozen of these types of people that I know in my life, people I went to school with and others who've either re-registered as independents and whatever, and some of them said, you know, God forbid, in their, to them, I may vote for Hillary, people who don't vote for Democrats very often. But a few others have just said, you know what, I'll just skip the top of the ticket.
And then when they say they're going to vote for Hillary, what happens with the rest of their ballot, though? I mean, how does that translate? Go ahead.
Oh, has a down ballot?
Yeah.
In that case, those are probably the people I know that would probably still largely vote Republican unless, depending upon who the Republicans were. There definitely are some crazy ones running for Senate seats and other things too, because they're obviously taking over the entire apparatus. But yeah, there are some who've gotten so distraught with the whole thing who said, you know, I may just not even bother.
And then the problem is that. Every time every opponent running against a Republican in a Senate or House seat says, Donald Trump says this, he's the leader of your party. Do you agree or disagree? That's where they get killed, right? Because
it becomes a constant, and it'll happen with Ted Cruz too. I mean, your Kelly Ayotte, I mean, Mark Kirby's done no matter what, but your Kelly Ayotte and your Rob Portman's, you know, and your Ron Johnson, I think, is already done too. But others like that, the open seat in Florida and even an open seat in a place like Indiana, which there is because Dan Coats is retiring. I think things like the open seat in Indiana and Blunt's seat in Missouri actually become winnable seats if we have the right nominees. Burr in North Carolina. I mean, I think you really start expanding the map to the point where you were in the Senate, you at least play in a dozen seats and you're defending one. I mean, you're defending basically Bennett, that open Nevada seat, without Harry Reid there, sadly. We actually, you know, I think Reid's done a great job more recently, but obviously his poll numbers are lower as he's gotten more partisan. I think we have a better chance without him running. So the truth of the matter is that, like, you know, we're playing offense almost everywhere. And I think that, I mean, I think they lose at least, you know, 7, 8, 9 seats if they've got, you know, and we win back the Senate definitively. What would be great is if you win it back with a huge number. And I think that, again, I'm not being Pollyannish about it. It may not happen. But if one of those two guys is at the top, nothing crazy happens and the race just goes forward as it's looking like right now, yeah, I think you win back the Senate with a decent number. I think you pick up a very large number of House seats in a 2006 kind of almost like surprise where, you know, I don't think we win back the House, no, but I think we get close enough to scare them.
Well, Cliff, as always, a real pleasure. I want to thank you for coming on the program on a regular weekly basis. You've made 2015 a lot more understandable to us. I mean, not actually the year, but what's going to be going on politically.
Well, good. I appreciate that. Obviously, for me, catharsis is one thing. Fans I've met from the show are awesome. You guys are great. Nothing I'd rather be doing between 12 and 1 on a Friday, and even your occasional Tuesday.
I love
it. So thank you for having me on.
All right, Cliff, have a great new year, and happy holidays.
You too. Happy holidays, everybody. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye. I just want to, before we move to the fun half, I want to go over the budget a little bit, because I've been teasing that, and I think it's quite been signed yet, but it's certainly passed the House, and it appears like it's going to be signed. Now, the budget's not, you know, look, you got a Republican House and Senate, so it's not horrible, but it's not particularly good policy. There are, the budget itself, $1.1 trillion, and there were some things that the Democrats, you know, had an issue with that went through anyways. The biggest and the worst, at least in my estimation, particularly sort of the most, I guess, the saddest coming out of Paris, is a end to the ban on crude oil exports. Essentially, this is a huge bailout for all of the fracking companies. You had frackers up in North Dakota. They fracked the heck out of everything. And there was a glut of fracked oil. And there's a glut on the world market. Prices have plummeted. I think right now a barrel of crude is somewhere around like a 2004 low. And people who thought that they were going to be getting $100 a barrel for oil are getting, you know, $30 or $40 a barrel. And you can't run a business that way. If I went into the podcast business and assumed I was going to get, you know, $750 a month per everyone's membership, and it turned out like, oh, I can only get 10, barely that. My costs remain the same, but my profit has dropped. So this is a big bailout for the oil companies because they're going to be able to try and sell it on the world market. It may end up raising gas prices here in some ways, but it certainly is going to encourage more fracking. And, you know, whether it's the huge methane leaks we're seeing in outside of Los Angeles, or whether it's just more carbon going in the air, this is the wrong direction to be headed in. If you happen to believe the preponderance of the evidence and the conclusions of the overwhelming majority of scientists who are involved in climate science around the world, this is a problem. But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, I don't know what else to say. There was also a failure to address Puerto Rico's debt crisis. Are we playing the war on Puerto Rico as one of the best ofs? No, we had too many best ofs. Too many best ofs of this show. That's the problem. The other problem with this is that there's a bunch of tax extenders that were included in this, and that's not necessarily bad. Many of them were corporate taxes. However, there was also the expansions of the earned income tax credit, the child tax credit, the tax credit for college students are going to be made permanent, and they are without the stringent eligibility requirements proposed by Republicans because, you know, those go to helping out people living in poverty or people with children or helping people go to college, and Republicans can't stand that. But the really sort of enraging thing about this is that it increases the deficit, of which, frankly, I have no problem whatsoever. However, it doesn't do this by increasing spending. It does this by decreasing tax receipts. And that is a far less efficient way of stimulating the economy, particularly when you've got those tax receipts going to corporations that are sitting on a ton of cash anyways. They've had these tax breaks. They haven't been hiring. So there's no reason to believe they're going to do that in the future. When you spend, you stimulate the economy. With a Republican-controlled Congress and Senate, any expenditures, any infrastructure spending, we have, I think, per GDP, the lowest infrastructure spending we've had since World War II. Any spending on providing health care, any spending on providing services, it stimulates the economy, both in terms of the actual dollars spent, because you've got to hire somebody to build that bridge or build that tunnel, or and it stimulates the money in it stimulates the economy insofar as the people who get the benefits of that spending also turn around and spend their money immediately rather than hoarding it in their bank accounts because they have so much money they don't know what to do with it. Literally don't know what to do with it. Maybe I'll run for president. I don't know. There are other aspects about the bill that are problematic. There was an increase in H-2B visas. These are visas for foreign workers seeking jobs at hotels, theme parks, ski resorts, golf courses, landscaping business, restaurants, and bars. It is basically intended to boost the supply of non-agricultural seasonal workers, which will probably depress wages a bit, and which is why you see unions who have an issue with that. You don't see... you also see a cessation of the visa waiver program, which allows a select list of countries. Currently, it's 38 nations. This has been going on for about 25 years, to travel to the U.S. without a visa. Those countries must reciprocate, which allows Americans the same privilege in terms of traveling on those foreign countries. Congress voted to change the deal. People coming from countries covered under the visa waiver program, including people who are citizens of those countries, will now need to get a visa if they're determined to be nationals of Iran, Iraq, Sudan, and Syria, or if they visited those countries since 2011. Now, contemplate this for a moment. It's not the case of Saudi Arabia. It's not the case of Pakistan. This is really just about politics. It's not really about security. Even then, if you are a dual citizen from Iran, I remember back in the early 80s, there was a big wave of Iranian immigrants in this country escaping the Ayatollah. If you are one of those people and you have dual citizenship now, you may need a visa to get back into your own country. It is, and also, for at least two of those countries, Iran and Syria, they deem people to be nationals regardless of where they're born or live if their fathers are citizens. So it's possible that someone who is a citizen of one of the countries on the visa-free travel list, say going to Britain or France, who lives there, grew up there, has never visited another country, could end up denied entry to the U.S. because of a parent born in Iran or Syria. And then we should also say that there is a strong likelihood that countries party to the new altered visa waiver program, including European Union member states, will institute reciprocal restrictions on Americans, so that if you're Iranian, you're an Iranian American living in America or a Syrian America, you won't be able to travel to these European countries. It's so messed up. And it, again, it is just to build this narrative that people from Syria, people from Iran, are necessarily our enemies. Now, the irony is that it appears that because of the deal struck with Iran over their nuclear program, that this may not apply to Iranian citizens. So, but I don't think, frankly, any of the Republicans who were in favor of this really care at the end of the day. They just had the opportunity to vote for it and to demonize these people more because, you know, there really should be a religious test anyways. I mean, let's be honest. One more element of the budget bill was that the deal basically put a moratorium on taxes for health insurance, health insurers, and medical device manufacturers. There was also a delay in the Cadillac tax. So the cost of the Affordable Care Act is going to go up, at least nominally. And this will be used to attack the Affordable Care Act. Now, it was much lower, the cost, than anticipated. But now that it's going to be starved of revenue, there you go. The Securities and Exchange Commission and the IRS cannot write rules that force the disclosure of political spending by corporations. Why is that in the bill? Because it's in the bill. So you still have this dark money where corporations can basically spend money without even telling their shareholders about it. So, you know, this is the price that we pay. And you're not going to see this on your daily life. I mean, if you're an Iranian-American or a Syrian-American, you probably will. But you're not going to see this, the implications of a lot of this bad stuff. You may see the earned income tax credit. You may see the child credit. You may see the college education credit. But you're just going to notice, like, hey, that bridge is closed. How come I can't ride on it anymore? Well, there's just no money for that. Et cetera, et cetera. So that is the spending bill. And we're going to take a break, head into the, I should tell people too, if you want to listen to the Nelson Dennis interview on Puerto Rico, it's in our archives. Members can search for it much easier on our app, of course, but other people can find it. The date was July 1st in 2015. We had a bunch that had a lot of votes. It was very difficult to choose. And I have to say that, like, I think we mentioned this yesterday. We went back and pulled the Naomi Klein from, I guess it was October or November of 2014, because we decided not to run that in the best of 2014 because it was so close. So it really should not be just the best of. It really should be like the ones we want to listen to again. And we try to do a little bit of a mix. You know, we have Walter Block in there. Is he the best, most sort of knowledge-providing guest? No.
Abductio defendum.
Yes. I see that you have decided to do the old ad hominem attack
Sam,
on me.
You're a Jewish guy, aren't you?
For a Jew, a fellow Jew.
Imagine the dream of thousands of courts, each competing with each other.
Yeah, this is the
infinity.
Court one, right?
This is the court one.
Yes.
And I think also
it's going to blow your mind. If you just started listening to this show.
The acorn one as well.
If you just started listening to this show, and you may not know the story of Walter Block. Well, you know what? I'll explain it in the end. I'm not going to go into it now. But I just want to thank you, you freeloaders, you freebies, you takers, you 47 percenters who just take. I do want to thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show in any way that you do, and hope you will contemplate in 2016 becoming a member for this program, which keeps it going. We have so much that we're going to be unveiling in 2016. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but we're going to have a new set if you watch on YouTube. And, you know, we're going to give you different ways of giving free memberships to people and of trying out free memberships. We're going to hopefully give you new ways of sharing parts of the show. Kyle is building a system that it's like, you know, maybe I get a little Star Wars in, but it's like the Death Star he's building. The new Death Star, but I mean, in a good way, like the Life Star. Yeah, I don't know. And
one halftime.
Yeah, exactly. 646-257-3920. If you want to become a member, if you want to get in under the wire and be a member and be able to say to yourself, I was a member in 2015, mofo. Because, you know, it makes a difference. I mean, you meet people at a party. I'm a member of the Majority Report. Or really, well, I've been a member since 2015, not 2016. You know, it counts. You can go to jointhemajorityreport.com or support the program by buying your coffee at justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, go to our Amazon link at majoritypreportkickback.com Bookmark it. Buy your Amazon crap through there. We get a kickback. Hence, MajorityReportKickback.com. Folks, we'll see you in 2016. Have a great holiday and a happy new year. 646-257-3920. I'll turn on the IM right now. Back in a minute.